As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. Merry Christmas Eve, everybody. We got some bowls to preview, Ari. This is I don't mean to get right down to business, but we have a lot of games to talk about. In fact, we're probably not going to be talking about the games that are happening immediately here Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, because we got to get to the ones that are happening next week. This will be a little bit of an evergreen podcast because I know a lot of you are off work. Your routines have been disrupted. You may be driving somewhere to see family over the weekend, and you know, you probably don't want to hear about a game that already happened. So we're going to be talking about a lot of games because there are a bunch, and we're going to take it all the way up to the semifinals. So we'll get to through the afternoon games on New Year's Eve, and then the rest we'll get to next week because, hey, we got more episodes next week. So do not worry. We're not taking off. I realize that everybody's off work. Ari and I don't have real jobs, so we don't have to do that. So we're here. And Ari, how are we doing? We recovered from the fast?
Oh yeah. It's funny because when I fasted, my ability to eat just a normal portion right when I broke the fast went away. Like I only ate half of what I ordered. Maybe I should just
add that's shrunk.
Like that is intermittent fasting, just to the extreme, I think, right? It makes you not want to eat as much. And I will say that I'm pretty upset that we're not just going to talk about food for another hour, but I guess we finally have to get into these bowl games.
We do, but it was fun talking about food, and I'm less irritable now, so I'm not going to be screaming about any sort of bad fries, though if you get me going, I probably will. But you know, we actually need to talk about cake, first of all, because if you've not seen the Birmingham Bowl Trophy, specifically the Birmingham Bowl Trophy from behind, boy, you're missing out. So if you're, you know, if you study Greek mythology, they call him Hephaestus. In Roman mythology, they call him Vulcan. He's called Vulcan here. Birmingham, the steel city, lots of metal work going on. So Vulcan, there's a big statue of Vulcan in Birmingham. So the Birmingham Bowl statue is Vulcan you don't have the forge in front of him, but he's basically, you know, dressed to work the forge. He's wearing his leather apron and nothing underneath. I mean, like you can see his whole ass in the back.
I have been doing these group fitness classes the last few weeks where I've been lifting weights and we did squats today. And I will say, A, that squats are the worst thing that anybody's ever done in any workout ever.
I thought shoulders were the worst.
Shoulders are the most painful. Squats are just the most miserable. That's the type of ass that I hope to achieve one day. Like if that's the end goal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you need your back squats, your front squats, your Bulgarian split squats, all of them you're going to need to get.
Do you think you can name more types of squats or more types of pizza?
Well, what, like, are we talking about like Detroit style, Chicago style, yeah. New York style, Sicilian?
You just named off like 19 Creole squats that I've never heard of before.
Well, a back squat, a front squat, those are your two basic ones.
Still don't know
Bulgarian
the difference between
split
those
squats.
Two
well, the a back squat and a front squat, the bar is on your back on a back squat and the bar is on your front.
Mr. Fitness, so like I don't know what the difference between those two things are. Like what, like why does the bar placement matter? Does it work different muscles in your ass?
It works the same muscles if it hits them differently, and yeah. To have a very strong set of muscles there, you'd want to work all of them in many different ways. The Bulgarian split squat is when you've got one leg on a bench, your back leg's on a bench, and then your front leg's out in front, and you go down and you try to get that back knee down toward the ground. Which,
let's just leave that in Bulgaria.
Suck.
They suck. I forget that you were once in a college weight training regimen.
Yeah, I don't like to think about those days. The first night or first morning after a lower body workout in one of those off-season programs, like you want to die. You did not know your legs could be that sore. And it is just almost impossible to even walk.
Andy, you know why I like you? Because it takes you just to say one thing, and the next thing you know, we're on a 6-minute conversation that's got nothing to do with football. But I did come up with a great story idea once when I was on the Ohio State beat. And I requested at Ohio State for them to let me do this. I said, I want you to take a shirtless picture of me, and I want to work out with Mickey Marotti for 2 months. And I want to see if you could do one of those picture transformations that you always show of the players with a media member. And it was my attempt to get free personal training.
It's not just free personal training. It's free personal training from one of the most qualified, most expensive trainers in the world. I mean, what is Mickey Marotti's annual salary? He's like 800 grand. So his time is very valuable.
I didn't want it to do it just to be for me. Like I would like go through the training system, you know, when it made sense in his schedule and if other people were around, whatever. And I was going to do it before and after media member, and they didn't let me do it because of insurance issues.
Oh, I'm sure. I would have loved that story. You would have transformed in 2 months. The before and after pictures would have been astoundingly different.
Yeah, I'd love to see. He's
one of the best, and he would take you through all that baseline stuff, tailor it exactly to you perfectly. And see, that's what
can Mickey Marotti train a slob? He's training the most exquisite examples of human athleticism on the face of the earth. And then going to somebody who's out of breath when they tie their shoes would be a very interesting dynamic for him.
He's used to people who are a little more motivated, but that's okay. But no, I don't know how lucky – I didn't understand how lucky I was. Like in college, the head strength coach when I walked on at Florida was Jerry Schmidt, who was at Oklahoma for all those years with Bob Stoops. He then went to Texas A&M. He's now headed back to Oklahoma. And then his number two at the time, who wound up becoming the number one when Schmidt went to Oklahoma, was Rob Glass, who has been the strength coach at Oklahoma State forever and is a massive reason why they're so successful. Like, those guys were awesome. And, we were just like, oh, I hate working out. But to understand the brain power that was going into those workouts now.
Yeah, I know. People pay thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for even one-fifth of the brain power that
Well, I told Rob Glass, so when I went up on the Florida beat, I think it was in 2004 was when I got on the Florida beat for the Tampa Trib. Rob was still the head strength coach at Florida. And I saw him one day and I told him, I was like, I wish I'd listened to you more. Like, he's like, everybody says that when they're older.
Yeah. Especially now when you get to see how expensive it is to have training. $150 an hour. I train you?
Oh man, this could be a podcast. This could be a YouTube. I don't think we'd live stream.
I need you to
it,
be in the same room though.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I come to Dallas and I work you out.
You could live with us.
I want to see that.
Yeah, you could live with me for a month going into the football season, and then our celebration will be an SEC trip together.
There you go. And I can eat whatever I want that weekend. That would be spectacular. But yeah, no, it would be fun. I think you'd be fine because you're willing to go do it. There's so many people who are not even willing to get off the couch.
Oh, yeah. I actually lift weights. And the eating is the part that's the hardest part. But I'm fairly strong. I'm not strong, but
doesn't matter how strong you are. That's the other thing as a 43-year-old in the gym now, because I see the 20, you know, I live in a college town, so I see the 21-year-old dudes trying to lift as much as they can and trying to impress the 21-year-old college ladies that are over, you know, on the next machine over. And I'm not even thinking about that.
You can blow yourself out with a 15-pound barbell. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Wait, 15-pound barbell. Where are we seeing?
Dumbbell. You? Sorry.
Dumbbell. There we go. Okay.
Still learning, bud.
All right. Well, pop quiz, hot shot. How much does an Olympic bar weigh?
The only thing I know is that a bench press bar is 45 pounds.
That's right. Olympic bar. That's an Olympic bar. So yeah, that 45 pounds. How about an easy curl bar?
I have no idea.
25 pounds.
I thought it was like 20.
That's the one that has the little V's in it, so you can grip it better.
So you can curl. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. We'll get you tested. Like when you go on a platform, we'll get you testing how bars spin and all that good stuff.
Oh yeah.
So you can do some power cleans.
I gotta be in tip top shape by May 1.
Oh, that's the wedding. That's right.
Yeah.
That would be a great project, like the Andy and Ari project, like the month before your wedding. Is just trying to whip
boot
you
camp.
Into shape.
Boot camp.
Yeah. 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 Like me in my truck, like following you and screaming at you with
a megaphone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Calling me maggot.
This is beautiful. I have memorized most of Full Metal Jacket, so I think I could probably pull that off.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I would do well in that environment. But let's get back to football.
Back to Vulcan's ass now. back to Vulcan's butt cheeks in Birmingham. We didn't even say who was in the game. It's Houston-Auburn. Auburn's a 2.5-point favorite. Auburn has a ton of guys out either opting out.
I just looked at the opt-out list, and who's even playing?
Well, this one's a light list for Auburn. But, you know, Roger McCreary and Zakobi McClain, Brodarius Ham already gone to the draft. Bo Nix is transferring, but he was hurt and wouldn't have been playing anyway. So TJ Finley's your starting quarterback. Sean Shivers is gone. Sean Manning is transferred. So it's a light list. Marcus Jones is opted out for Houston. So they're not completely fully stocked either. But this is one of those with Auburn, you don't know. Like there was a bowl game a few years ago. Auburn played Purdue. I want to say it was a Music City Bowl. And it was, I believe it was 2018. I think it was the year that Jeff Brohm had led Purdue to the win against Ohio State. And then it looked like, oh, Auburn's not going to care about this game and it's going to be awful. And Auburn just annihilated Purdue. So I really, that was one of those, like, you just don't understand what's going to happen in the game until it happens, because it's so hard to predict who's going to do what. Auburn won that game 63-14, by the way.
How much do you buy in the I don't care mentality?
Here's the thing. I have no way to predict it, and neither does anybody else. Like, you can look at the and this is like that Music City Bowl I'm talking about. You can look at the circumstances of the game and say, Team X probably won't care about this game. These guys aren't playing. This season didn't go as they expected. They're playing an opponent they don't respect, blah, 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 blah. And then Team X may have something happen. You know, something may have happened in the beginning of December that made them have like the best practices they've ever had. And suddenly they just destroy the other team. I just don't know how you predict this.
Yeah, you know, and it's like going through spreads right now in like bowl season. And listen, I play the games because I'm a degenerate loser, but it's just like really hard to predict what, like if these games are being played in November, you know, the way you might view them is different. I think it would be a fun show. Maybe we'll do it. Is a who gives a crap meter of like which teams you think should care the most and which ones should care the least. And, you know, right. I could look at a list right now and find a bunch of teams that I'd be like, well, why would they even care.
I mean, it feels like Auburn shouldn't care that much. They're between offensive coordinators. They have a lot of people leaving. Now, I guess you can say this will be year two under Brian Harsin. This is a chance for some younger guys to establish themselves as potential starters for next year. So there's obviously motivation there. And this is Auburn. These are not bad players.
Yeah.
These are the young players are good. They're just inexperienced.
And so, Houston obviously cares because beating an SEC team is beating an SEC team.
Absolutely. You know,
it's always Houston, the underdog always cares.
Houston had a great year this year, but bad taste in the mouth losing to Cincinnati in the American Championship game.
How many years has Clayton Tune been in college?
64. It's interesting that you mentioned that because I was speaking of miserable bowl games for people. Clayton Tune was the starting quarterback for Houston in the Armed Forces Bowl in 2018. That was the one that got Major Applewhite fired. Army won that game 70-14. That's what I was before Missouri played Army in the Armed Forces Bowl. I was looking at that game going, I wonder if this is going to be similar. Because Missouri's got a defensive coordinator from the NFL who doesn't, you know, has not seen the option in almost 20 years. Could this be that game? Turned out it wasn't. Missouri played pretty well on defense, and Missouri actually ran a little option itself, but still winds up losing on a last second field goal. But it was a close game. It wasn't 70-14. It was a right down to the wire.
There is no better form or more thorough form of ass kicking in college football than when Navy or Army is playing a team that can't figure it out.
Oh, it's awful. Well,
fullbacks averaging rival, 19 yards a carry.
My high school's rival was a triple option team and actually still is a triple option team. And we were 0-4 when I was in school against it. We couldn't. Like, we knew what we were supposed to do, and it did not matter. Like, they just destroyed us every time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I really enjoy watching triple option football all that much, but when it's working, it's working. It's
beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I actually lean toward Auburn in this one. I mean, they're only favored by 2.5. Maybe they got to look at Vulcan's butt cheeks and were like, you know what? This has inspired us to do some more squats. In
home
the gym.
State pride.
Yeah, yeah. So
they care. I think at the end of every bowl game, we should ask if there's a big brand name. Does the favorite care?
Right. We'll be right back after these words.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Well, let's go to the next one, because remember how I spent the entire time talking about this one, saying I have no idea what's going to happen?
Which next one?
I think I know exactly what's going to happen. I'm probably going to be wrong. So we go to the Liberty Bowl, Texas Tech versus Mississippi State. The major opt-out here is Charles Cross, Mississippi State's left tackle, who's going to be potentially a first-round pick. But nobody else from Mississippi State that we know of is opting out, and Will Rogers is very comfortable in that offense. And Texas Tech fired a coach, hired a coach. They're in between coaches. This feels like Mississippi State should win this game easily, which is why they're a 9.5-point favorite. I'm not sure that's enough.
Liberty Bowl should be called the Leech Bowl, right?
Yes. Well, yeah, obviously there's the revenge factor. Mike Leach says Texas Tech still owes him money from when they fired him. He would not hesitate to score 100 on them if he could, I don't think.
Yeah, I think I buy this. And Mississippi State, you know, they were 7-5 this year, but I think they're a much better football team than the brand would indicate, you know, especially if you like go
look. They had to play some pretty tough opponents in their division.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, losing to LSU, Alabama on the road at Arkansas in a rivalry game against Mississippi, I mean, the only game there that you might want to be like, what the hell happened there is a road game at Memphis, but I think that was back in September. So LSU too, I guess, but the LSU revenge factor existed in that one a little bit. But yeah, I like Mississippi State here as well.
Yeah, and it's funny because I just spent 5 minutes saying you never know with these games, and I'm like, I know exactly what's going to happen here. But it does feel obvious there. It just does.
Yeah. And when it feels obvious, that's usually when you're wrong. So,
of course. Exactly. So, Red Raiders, enjoy your Liberty Bowl win. We've just guaranteed it. So, let us move to the Holiday Bowl. San Diego. NC State is a 1.5-point favorite against UCLA. Ari, I am fascinated by this game because of the news that came down last week that Dylan Gabriel, the excellent quarterback from UCF, who's originally from Hawaii, so he's headed closer to home now, he's headed to UCLA. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, still at UCLA. We're sure Chip's okay at UCLA, right?
I think he's okay. Well, I was just going to ask you, if they win the bowl game and finish 9-4, is that what their record would be, 9-4?
That feels like a good year? Progress for Chip Kelly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at a certain point, it's just like the intersection between progress and arrival. You know, progress is always fun while you're on the upswing. But, you know, at a certain point, it's just like when an investor invests in a business, at a certain point, they want their money back. And, you know, to me, it's like how many years of Chip Kelly progress do you get the benefit of the doubt of, you know?
Yeah.
But like also weird intersection between quarterbacks, and Dorian Thompson-Robinson was a very coveted recruit. And when he's playing his best, it looks like Chip Kelly really has arrived there. You know, when UCLA's offense looks like it's supposed to, you know, he's the guy that's in charge there. So like, you know, watching what he does in this game, it'll be very interesting to see because, you know, he hasn't announced that he's leaving yet. And I don't necessarily know what that means for the quarterback position. It's like, why would Dylan Gabriel go there under any other understanding unless he's, you know, under the...
Right, because he could have gone a lot of places.
Yeah, I mean, the guy threw for like 9,000 yards. So, I mean, do you go to a place to compete or do you go to a place for the job? And, you know, how that all plays out is going to be something that's certainly fascinating. And I wouldn't be shocked to see DTR have a huge game in this game and make things a little even more muddy, if they are muddy at all internally there.
So we move on now to the Guaranteed Rate Bowl. Fascinating scenario going on with it's Minnesota and West Virginia, which you'd think is not an intriguing rivalry or an intriguing matchup. Minnesota's a 4.5-point favorite. But interestingly enough, Kirk Ciarrocca, remember he left Minnesota after that really great year they had offensively to go to Penn State and be the offensive coordinator. He then got fired at Penn State. He helped out at West Virginia this year in an analyst role. He's very close to Neil Brown, the coach at West Virginia. Well, 3 days ago, he got hired back, or not three days, a few weeks ago, he got hired back by PJ Fleck to be the offensive coordinator at Minnesota. So he's back with Tanner Morgan. Now, I don't know how much he's doing for this game, but you talk about a guy who can scout the opponent. Holy cow.
Yeah. I sometimes wonder, like, scouting the opponent, how much value actually is there? Because it's always the beat writer's dream when they can write a story about that.
If you can find a weak link somewhere, if there's an offensive lineman that just can't block a certain person, or a corner who can't cover, or, you know, that's the part where they're going to look for that. But yeah, I just think that's fascinating. And it was interesting because when I saw this matchup, I was like, oh, that doesn't seem very interesting at all. But now I'm pretty interested in it.
It's like these bowls all have like this little like underlying hook that make you feel like, oh my God, yeah, that's something I might want to watch now, you know? And as we're recording this podcast, I'm watching North Texas, Miami of Ohio. So I don't necessarily feel like I'm all that concern about who's playing. It's just that's football on TV. But, you know, yeah, all these storylines that you can come up with are certainly fascinating.
All right, I got one for you. This is one the spread does not matter as much to me as the over under. The Fenway Bowl, Virginia SMU. Now, are we sure Fenway Park orients correctly for a football field? Remember when Northwestern played?
Someone's getting slammed in the Green Monster there.
yeah. So I think it's fine. I think we would know already. But Virginia SMU, Brennan Armstrong, Tanner Mordecai, 71.5 is the number. I'm not after my ACC championship game misadventures. I realized that was involving Pitt and probably doesn't count for anything. But yeah, I feel like I'm out on this. But this does feel like that's a number that these two offenses could realistically hit.
I think there was a streak during the year where people were automatically betting Virginia unders because they hit like 6 weeks in a row. So that's just a trend that I'm 90% sure was true that you have to track on this one.
I guess so. The Illinois game probably skewed it. Everybody was like, "Oh, I'm all over this," because I do remember shortly after they torched Illinois. I want to say it was like 2 weeks later. They played Wake Forest on a Friday night. Wake Forest defense was not particularly great, but it did shut down Virginia's offense after a period of time, and it didn't. I don't think the number went over in that game. I'm not sure. I know Wake scored quite a few points, but yeah, it does. It does seem like. But then you had the BYU game, which had to have gone over.
It went over by like 50 points, didn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, I feel like this one's one where you could see that. Now SMU obviously in a coaching shooter, and I want to say this. I texted this to you before we started recording the show. As I was loading the lines in for the graphics on the YouTube video, like, holy hell, were there so many coaching changes this year? Like, I don't want to hear any complaining about the players opting out because this is Bronco Mendenhall's last game. At least he's coaching the bowl game. But Sonny Dykes is already at TCU. Rhett Lashley's already been hired at SMU. Miami's in a bowl game. Rhett Lashley was their OC. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah, trying to track national signing day was kind of a battle too. It's like, where are these kids signing? Who's going to be the coach there? There's a lot to track, and then you start going to the bowl game. It's like assistants and head coaches. It's not just head coaches. There's a ton of assistants moving from place to place too.
Yeah, it is. So
are people still? Are we still in the era of college football where you hear people complaining about opt outs?
Oh yeah, or you get the reverse of it, which was unbelievable. And as we're recording this, the Florida UCF game has not happened yet. When you listen to this, it will have happened. But I was talking to somebody here and they're like, I can't believe they're letting Emory Jones play in this game. They shouldn't even allow him to wear the colors. And I'm like, you realize he's doing them a favor because Anthony Richardson can't play. So they needed a quarterback and he doesn't have to do this because he's already been bailed on by this program. But he's going to go come bail him out for this game. And you're complaining about him? Come on.
Dude, it's the Rudy disease, man. I'm telling you. He shouldn't be able to wear the colors again because he doesn't love this team the way that I love this. It's insanity.
Again, you know, getting back to the first leg day of the offseason program, we could put those Rudy people through the first leg day of the offseason program and they would be deprogrammed immediately. They'd be like, nope, I get exactly why they do all this stuff. Yeah, it all makes sense to me now.
Yeah, I mean, I remember walking up to, you know, post-practice in the middle of July, and these guys are sitting in big rubber tubs, and like they look like they're about to pass out. It's like, I can't imagine like what kind of workouts they put these guys through. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, it's not the place that it's going to be standing by him long-term as a starting quarterback, so... Is it Emory Jones transferring because he doesn't love the program, or is the program deciding for him that he has to go somewhere else?
I mean, he gave the program 4 seasons. Most people only stay in college 4 years, so I think that's plenty.
He can't wear the colors thing is so annoying. It's like, why? Because the coach that is in place is going to be going a different direction and isn't the coach that recruited him? Like, it's like sometimes these transfers are, you know, I think that you could like – change the type of transfer, like between has to transfer because needs a new route to the playoff or to the field. a transfer for selfishness reasons because they just didn't have enough patience, transfer for, right. you know, academic. I mean, there's different types of transfers. And I don't think this,
you should actually have to check a box. Transfer. You should actually have to check a box when you enter the portal.
Is this a Judas? Are you, is this a Judas transfer or is this, right. you know, in good faith?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, we should have them check a box. Like, are you a rising sophomore who's just mad you didn't play last year? Like, check that box.
Check, yeah. You, and that's like, okay, then you can't
wear. Did you spend 4 years here under four different offensive coordinators? Check that box.
Yeah, and then based on the results of your quiz, we get to determine whether or not you're allowed to wear the colors again.
I like it, man.
And by the way, if you're an adult that says they can never wear the colors again, you're a loser. Like, I'm sorry, like I don't know what to tell you.
It is truly amazing to me. But Virginia SMU Fenway Bowl, praying for the over. That I want that to look like a basketball game,
Andy. I don't want any defense played there. A single fan of Florida giving the program more than Emory Jones did, I guess. Boosters?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's some boosters that have given, you know, into the eight figures. So, yeah, I would say they have. But,
yeah,
no, the average person, probably not. No.
Yeah.
So.
Emory Jones, you can wear the colors as long as you want. You can wear them on your wedding day. Listen, you can get a tuxedo with an orange lapel.
An orange and blue tux?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're not going to have to get him in shape for the wedding. He's going to be in shape for his wedding. Let's. All right.
Sorry. Certain things trigger me, Andy. I'm sorry.
Oh no. I understand. I was the same way. I was trying to hold it in because I'm not the arbiter of who can wear the colors. I mean, I wasn't any good. I didn't earn anything. They let me along for the ride.
How many people on the face of the earth who have never stepped foot in Indiana wear Notre Dame colors?
It's true. It's exactly right. Yeah. Like I. But
and they wear alternates. I also.
But I also saw what you know, the people who did bleed and sweat for the program for a long, long time and gave a lot. And I respect their opinions a lot. And I don't respect the opinion of someone who went out there at all. So it's pretty easy.
Yeah. Emory Jones is the perfect example of somebody who can wear the colors forever.
I can't wait to see his orange and blue tux. That will be spectacular. So moving on to another bowl game in a baseball stadium, the Pinstripe Bowl, Maryland, Virginia Tech. The Terps are 3.5-point favorite. Virginia Tech, another team between coaches. Now, this one, they fired their coach. It wasn't that their coach left, but their current coach was Penn State's defensive coordinator, and now Penn State has a different defensive coordinator who was Miami's head coach who got fired. It's the circle of life. So I don't know what happens in this, because this is another great example of what we were talking about earlier, the give a crap meter. Like, where should Virginia Tech's give a crap be in this situation?
They have five or six starters not playing in this game because of either transferring or holding out for the NFL draft. And I just like love these matchups because when you look at them, it's just like, aren't Maryland and Virginia Tech kind of the same a little bit in some regard? Where they
do recruit from a similar geographic area for sure.
Actually, you can make the case that Maryland has recruited better than Virginia Tech the last 3 or 4 years. But Maryland also lost two of their best players from the recruiting cycle last year to transfer. So it's like you can make a splash and get 5-star prospects or high end 4-star prospects during the recruiting cycle, but if you can't keep them in your program for more than a year, then what's the point? Like, it's like you didn't even get them. So. You know, and Virginia Tech just hasn't gotten them at all. So, you know, now they've got a new coach and, you know, this person will do their best to try to reverse that. But, you know, I think both of these teams, in my opinion, signify teams that have the potential to be much better than they are and just can't figure it out for whatever reason.
Maryland in its first bowl game, by the way, in 5 years. So none of these guys have played in a bowl game before. So there's some excitement there. You're playing in Yankee Stadium. That's pretty cool. Like, yeah. I'm going to go with the team that has a reason to be pumped to be there. And again, this is logic telling me this, and it could be completely wrong. But if you're a Maryland player, you've never been to a postseason game, you never played a postseason game before unless you transferred from somewhere else, you're getting to play in freaking Yankee Stadium. Like, that seems pretty cool.
Yeah, 3 wins in the Big Ten, 6 wins total in the 6-6 season, including one over West Virginia. Is this a successful season for Maryland?
No, I think they want more than this. I think they expected more than this when they hired Mike Loxley, because they expected him to get the kind of players that would allow them to compete in the Big Ten East. Now, I don't think they were expecting to be competing in the Big Ten East yet, but I would say being completely non-competitive in the Big Ten East is not what they were hoping for, and that's kind of where they are right now.
Verse number 5, Iowa, 51-14 loss. Number 7, Ohio State, 66-17. At Minnesota, 34-16. Michigan State, 40-21. Michigan, 59-18. You know, I think the sign of progress for Maryland isn't just what their record is or making a bowl. It's about being competitive against teams that are either great or on their way to being great. It's just like Maryland. I remember the night that my baby was born, Maryland and Iowa were on TV. It was a Friday night game. And that was the most disgusting game I've ever watched in my entire life. Like, that's like the game that my daughter will be baptized in football by, who, by the way, loves football for an infant.
Good.
Not that she knows what she's looking at, but whenever there's a football game on TV, she naps. Whenever there's a football on TV, she kind of like looks towards the TV, even though she's not supposed to. And whenever she's being fussy and crying, I pull up a YouTube video and just type in a random two teams and show up a bunch of old matchups, and I play it in her ear, and it's like a sound machine. She falls asleep to like,
look, honey,
Keith Jackson's voice.
It's Johnny Football in 2012.
Yeah, and she falls asleep to
watch
commentary.
Him run around against Alabama and hit Ryan Swope in the end zone. And look at the poor fan behind Ryan Swope.
I will say that there is nothing more relaxing than a breezy fall Sunday or Saturday with the windows open, a few candles going, and just the sun setting. It's dark early, and you got Chris Collingsworth's voice just blasting through your house.
Oh, he can rock you to sleep.
Yes.
That is, now, if you're in the West, if you're on the West Coast, it's a little too early to go to sleep. But, where we live, it's the perfect
unless
spot.
You're in a carb coma, because I always used to fall asleep at the 4 o'clock games because I ate a whole pizza by myself.
I resemble that remark. I think I've been there.
The time of day is irrelevant.
You sleep through the first half and then you watch the second half.
Yeah. You wake up and it's 17-14 in the middle of the third quarter and you're back again looking at menus. Yeah, I get it.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. So, Ari, the Cheez-It Bowl is no longer the Cheez-It Bowl that we remember. Remember, there was that Cheez-It Bowl between TCU and Cal that was one of the worst football games ever played. I think it went into overtime. And the teams combined for something like 9 interceptions. But that was a completely different Cheez-It Bowl than this Cheez-It Bowl. This Cheez-It Bowl is the former Champ Sports Bowl, former Russell Athletic Bowl, the Orlando game, where you got some good games. You also got Clemson and Cole Stout destroying Oklahoma and causing, a chain of events that kind of is still ongoing as Josh Heupel is now the head coach at Tennessee and Lincoln Riley became the OC at Oklahoma, then the head coach at Oklahoma. Now he's the head coach at USC. It's the circle of life. Brent Venables was there that day. Now he's the head coach at Oklahoma. This is Iowa State Clemson. Clemson sort of found itself at the end of the season, but both coordinators gone. Iowa State has almost everybody. It's not, they're not completely intact, but most of their best players still playing. Brock Purdy playing his last game at Iowa State. And he'd always planned on this being his last year, but I kind of thought when they added the extra year of eligibility, Brock might think about being a 5-year starter. Like, that, who gets to be a 5-year starter?
As our good friend Scott Dockerman said, if we would have told each other in September that Clemson and Iowa State were playing in a Florida game, at the end of the year,
Orange Bowl.
You think it's a playoff game. So but yes, 5-year starter would be cool. My favorite thing about the opt-out for Clemson is it's Justin Ross is foot/NFL draft. Injured, but also going to the league. And I'm happy to see that's
Justin Ross.
Actually,
hey, remember that one postseason I played in? That was pretty good, right? Or well, yeah, I guess he played in the 2019 one too. But remember that first postseason I played, and I was pretty awesome. Like, I don't really need to show you much else after that.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's it. And there was a point in time where that kid might not have ever been able to play again. So to see that he's going to get a chance to achieve his dream is a really cool thing. It's like, who gives a crap more in this game?
I think Iowa State does.
I agree.
But I don't know. Clemson, you got, remember, the coordinators at Clemson are just moving up, but they're still kind of going to want to put their stamp on things. They're going to want to figure out what they want to do. I think Clemson's maybe going to dabble in the transfer portal just a tad. So I do think there's some pressure on the Clemson players to perform here. You know, if you're DJ Uiagalelei, you want to have a really good game because Cade Klubnik's coming in, and you want to make sure you establish, this is my offense, I am the guy.
You have to answer this question, and if you're right, you live, and if you're wrong, you die. Who is Clemson's starting quarterback next year?
What game is it?
Game one.
DJ Uiagalelei.
Really?
Now ask me game five.
Game five.
Cade Klubnik.
So this is like the Trevor Lawrence plan? Worked before.
Well, here's the thing. If I'm wrong about this, and DJ's the starter in game five, it means DJ has taken a massive leap.
And how much did you say that Clemson's issues were him not developing into what we thought he was going to be?
Not all of it. Some of it. Some of it was the line. Some of it was Will Shipley getting hurt. I think Will Shipley's healthy the whole season. That's it. But again, the
Clemson's entire hallmark of rising up in prominence as a program has been dominance at the quarterback position. If you like go back and look at like the entire rise of the program, what is it? It's two names. It's Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence. Maybe even a little bit of Taj Boyd.
It's also Taj Boyd. Yeah. Taj Boyd sort of ushered that era in. So,
you know, but now in a world where they don't have a distinct quarterback advantage the way that they used to, I'm very curious to see how that's going to all play out here in 2 or 3 years. And maybe that sounds like craziness because Cade Klubnik could come in and just be the next great college quarterback. And I think that's the expectation, and we won't be having this discussion. I think it's more so about all the other programs that they've usually competed against in the playoff also leveling up their quarterback recruiting. So, you know, I'm very curious to see how DJ continues to develop. And, you know, I don't know how much I buy great performance in randomly branded bowl game equals momentum into the offseason that's going to alter the way things are viewed a year from now.
It doesn't, and we need to stop selling that.
So that to me, you know, I think it's a good thing to play well, but I think having a good game in a randomly branded bowl game is just as good as having a nice few days of practice. So, you know, we saw a lot of him this year. I'm very excited to see. I mean, what would you say? Iowa State would be like the second or third best team in the entire ACC this year. So it's a really good opponent for Clemson.
Yeah, I think this, and it's a good matchup. You know, I think this will be a fun game. Both defenses are pretty good. You know, it's a low total. It's 44.5. That feels about right. I think this will be a pretty high level, like played at a high level, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which you don't know when you get these matchups, if that's going
to
happen.
It's an interesting matchup to me because these two programs kind of both seem like they're at an intersection. Because Iowa State, you know, it was a pretty solid year. I mean, it wasn't what they wanted. But 2 years ago, they almost won the Big 12 and Matt Campbell became like the sexiest name in coaching. And then this year they didn't really reach their expectations. So going into the offseason, I think the question around Iowa State is what they did 2 years ago the norm, or the realistic bar of what you should be hoping for? Or was it just a transcendent year that is going to be hard to duplicate? And then I think Clemson, and I know Clemson fans are probably listening to this thinking, oh, this guy hates Dabo Swinney and he's going to tweet at me a bunch of crap about how I don't like their favorite team. But I do think it's a very interesting intersection for their program in terms of where they're going to be in 2 or 3 years. And I have my major doubts that Clemson is going to be an annual national championship contender the way that they were through the 2016, 17, 18, 19 seasons, you know, not just because of recruiting, but losing Venables and, you know, all the things that have kind of taken place there. I think that they have to prove to me again that they are a sustainable program in the sense of they're going to be like on par with Bama. You know, that's a really hard bar to maintain.
I still think they can. I know you think that, all the stuff that's happened would keep them from being a perennial contender. I think this was this year was an anomaly. And we'll see who's right. We don't know. We won't know until we see them play.
The problem is that you could see it coming, and then it happened. Like, this wasn't like a out of left field, I cannot believe they had an awful year. This was like, they're down this year, and then they were down. And it's just like, how many times in the last 10 years have you looked at Alabama and said they're going to be down this year, and then they were down? Like, we've tried to be smart about it.
Their version of down is they only beat Florida by two, have a hiccup against Texas A&M, and still wind up the number one seed in the playoffs. So,
you know, I think this year Ohio State had a down year. How many times in the past decade have you said Ohio State's going to be down, and then you were right? You know, it's just a little bit. It feels different at Clemson right now.
We will see what happens. Two places where it feels very different than September. And I think if you'd have told all these people in September that they would be meeting in the Alamo Bowl, their coaches would be gone, and they would think you were insane. Like, if you came to Oregon after they beat Ohio State and said, you're going to play Oklahoma in the Alamo Bowl, Mario Cristobal will be Miami's coach, Lincoln Riley will be USC's coach, none of you will have had the season you thought you'd have, and oh, by the way, the star power in this game is way down. That I don't think anybody believe you, because they'd have been like, no, we're making the playoff. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's like ranking basically all the things that kind of went awry there. It's like the Spencer Rattler transfer portal thing, the Lincoln Riley thing moving to USC.
Oh, yeah. Tell the Oklahoma guys Spencer Rattler is going to be South Carolina's new starting quarterback.
Yeah, yeah. I just like, how would you rank those on the level of surprise? Like, which one do you think is the most shocking? Spencer Rattler to South Carolina?
Well, Mario going to Miami because he's from there is not as surprising. I think it's Lincoln Riley going to USC or Spencer Rattler going to South Carolina.
I think it's one Lincoln Riley two. Going to USC because Caleb Williams, that's not a surprise. Everybody saw him sign. So if you would have told me Caleb Williams would have taken over before the year, I wouldn't have thought you were crazy. You know, it's just crazy because of our perception of what Spencer Rattler was supposed to be this year that makes that crazy, not what Caleb Williams is or what he might be. The Lincoln Riley thing is the most surprising because I don't know why this was the case, but if a coach was coaching at a top-tier program, it's hard to view him as a candidate for a major job opening. It's just like whenever we have that discussion about, well, who are they going to go get? You never say, well, you can go get somebody who already has a great job. But that's what USC did. I mean, that's what LSU did. I mean, there's people leaving top-tier jobs for other top-tier jobs and coming into the year. That would have been a foreign concept. So, you know, now on, who you're going to get isn't a game I want to play. I'll just say, well, why don't you go get like, was Ryan Day going to be a candidate for another job? You know, probably not, but you never know.
It is crazy to think about. So Oklahoma is a 4.5-point favorite. Most of their defensive line has opted out of the game. Kayvon Thibodeau, obviously Oregon's best player, best pass rusher, he's opted out, and they've had several other opt-outs. So star power way down. I would think Oklahoma's offense is going to be a little bit better. Oregon's defense, though, even without Thibodeau, is still all right. You know, they're still banged. They had so many season-ending injuries. I mean, it goes back. Justin Flo got hurt way back at the beginning of the season. So I think Oklahoma does fine here. I would give the nod to Oklahoma in this game, even though it's probably a little bit easier for Oregon to score with Oklahoma's basically entire starting defensive line not there.
Yeah, it's kind of like the depleted rosters of who. And it's really hard to project a game and pick a team based on who isn't and who isn't playing because we're unfamiliar with who is going to play. You know the names and all that stuff, but projecting which team's going to be able to plug all the holes they have better is kind of a tough proposition. But my gut instinct here is that Oklahoma will score a ton on an Oregon defense that just got done being pushed around in its last two games. And, you know, I think Caleb Williams is a very interesting discussion point right now about not just, you know, his development and what he might look like in this bowl game against one of the better teams of the Pac-12, but, you know, whether or not he is the thing that Oklahoma is going to attach their future to.
I would think he was the most important meeting that Brent Venables had when he became the Oklahoma coach.
I agree.
So, and it sounds like that's all settled and they're in good shape. So we'll see what happens there. Ari, we got to get to a very important game. Lot on the line here. The Duke's Mayo Bowl, North Carolina versus South Carolina. Shane Beamer and Mac Brown have said they will take the Mayo bath if they win. Mac Brown went so far as to say, you can hit me in the face with a frying pan as long as we win. So fortunately for Mac Brown, this is not the Lodge Frying Pan Bowl. A mayo bath is the worst that can happen.
Would you rather be hit in the face with a mayo bath, or would you rather with a frying pan or take a mayo bath?
Mayo bath. I would throw up all over the field and I'd probably continue to retch, but
at least your voice or your nose wouldn't be broken. Yeah.
Yeah.
North Carolina laying double scores against South Carolina in a Mayo Bowl seems kind of scary. Like, I don't know.
Zeb Nolan, by the way, your starter for the Gamecocks at quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably the reason why. But North Carolina repeatedly let me down this year. Like, I'm heartbroken.
Oh, they are your pit.
Yeah, they're my pit. They left the pit in my stomach, I'll tell you that much. If they're not good next year, I'm going to be really upset.
They should be. That roster should be very good. You know, we'll see what happens. Drake May, you'd assume, becomes the quarterback. Or is Sam? Has Sam Howell declared for the draft yet?
I mean, Sam Howell was supposed to be the number one quarterback taken in the draft this year. What do you think happened to his stock after this year? Still a first rounder?
It didn't go well, but I would think.
Do people compare him to Baker Mayfield?
Going to be a high draft pick.
Like, if he's being compared to Baker Mayfield, is that the guy? Is that the comp?
I think that's a... Yeah, I mean, his improvisational skills, I don't think are as good as Baker's were. Not really even close in college, yeah. But he's accurate. He gets the ball out on time. I mean, he does all of those things very well. And I would argue as well or better than the other top QBs in the draft. You know, Kenny Pickett, Matt Corral.
Do you think he has a stronger arm than Baker Mayfield?
Don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know.
So we'll see what happens. You know, I would assume he's still going, and maybe Drake May's the next guy. You know, maybe they go in the
portal. I mean, I would be pretty surprised. Drake May was a pretty big time recruit. If Sam Howell came back, that would not be something that people would anticipate.
So I hesitate to even try to pick this game, given what both teams were this season. I just can't wait to see the Mayo bath and the aftermath of the Mayo bath.
6-6 in the SEC is better than 6-6 in the ACC. Give me the two scores.
Okay. We got the Gamecocks.
Also, right. I think Shane Beamer's a sneaky good coach right now. Like, I'd buy stock in Shane Beamer. Oh,
getting that roster to a bowl game is quite an achievement. Speaking of which, another guy in the SEC who inherited a really rough situation and turned it into something nice is Josh Heupel at Tennessee. Tennessee is a 5-point favorite against Purdue in the Music City Bowl. Purdue's best two players, best player on each side of the ball, David Bell, George Karlaftis, not playing in this game. Alante Taylor is opting out for Tennessee. I think Tennessee wins this game, Ari. I think the good vibes of this season continue. Like, they felt like a very happy team, and maybe they are happy because they're out from under the boot of Jeremy Pruitt.
Can I ask you a question?
No,
I'm with you on Tennessee, by the way. But is Jeff Brohm a good coach or a bad coach?
Does it have to be one or the other?
I mean, it switches every year.
Pretty good coach or an above average coach, or is he worth
his contract this year?
This has been my question, and this is my question about all of the schools that are mid to lower tier schools in the Big Ten and in the SEC, because they're all paying these obscene amounts to their coaches because they can, because they're rich and they have to spend it on something because they're not allowed to give it to the players. I'm not sure anybody at one of those schools that you're paying that much money to is worth what you're paying them.
Well, I mean, if you go back and you think about the way that Purdue performed after the first year under the Brohm era, like the number one thing was that Brohm was going to be a candidate for major, major jobs, and the following
right.
year went terribly.
And then every time Rondale Moore would get hurt, they would not look that good.
And then the next year it went horribly. And then this year, I mean, I don't know, Purdue is, what's their record, 8-4 this year?
They beat Iowa and they beat Michigan State. And those are the games that everybody remembers because those teams were ranked really high when they beat them.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a successful season for Purdue. 8-4, you know, and the idea that Tennessee is happy is certainly a take, and I think I agree with that. But I think Purdue's pretty happy too, right?
I think they're pretty happy.
I'd be happy.
But my question is, how much does he have to keep doing? Does Brohm have to keep doing this year after year after year for them to be happy? Do they have to win 8 games, have a chance to win a 9th in a bowl game?
Is Purdue's ceiling 10 wins or is it 8 wins?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking back to the Joe Tiller era, you know, when Drew Brees was there. In an era when teams would play 12 games, that would be a potential 10 win team, right?
Yeah. I mean, the game's just changed so much since then.
So
I don't know. I think 8-4 is about as good as you can expect. I mean, they beat Oregon State, which is more and more looking like a good win.
That looks right? like a really good win, yeah.
They stayed within 2 touchdowns of Notre Dame on the road. They beat Iowa. They beat Michigan State. They beat Nebraska. They beat Northwestern. They beat Indiana and won their rivalry game 44-7. I mean, that's a really good season for Purdue.
Well, there you go. So what's your answer on the question you asked me? Is Jeff Brohm a good coach, bad coach, in between?
I think he's worth his contract right now. I don't think you'd be
right now.
I think you'd be misguided to say he's not if this is the most recent year and they've done this. I mean, David Bell is like the best. David Bell is better, I think, at football than Rondale Moore. And I think that's kind of a controversial thing to say, but I think in a few years it might not be.
And Carl Aftis is going to be drafted very high.
Yeah. And you got both of those guys are Indiana guys they kept home.
That he did a good job developing. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. It's one of those things I don't think you can expect that level of consistency. I think, you know, Indiana ran into that this year where they had a couple really good years in a row and then the wheels fell off because they're Indiana. At some point, does Purdue? And then what happens with Jeff? Are they understanding of Jeff Brohm at that point?
I think you have to be understanding as a coach to know that you're not going to win 8 games every single year at Purdue.
That's the part I'm curious about.
And if there is a coach that gets them there, then he won't be the coach there very long.
Yeah, I mean, the thought with Brohm was always when Louisville opened that he'd be gone. He didn't take Louisville. They managed to keep him. Louisville hired Scott Satterfield, and so there's not that pull of home. So now, but you're right. If he wins 8 or 9 again at Purdue, then he's going to have a lot of money.
I was kind of shocked that he didn't go to Louisville if given the chance. I mean, I think it's easier to win there than it is at Purdue.
I would agree, but you know, he'd just gotten to Purdue. He'd had a pretty good year. I don't know. I understand why he stayed when he did.
Yeah, I mean, alma mater isn't always an all be all, right? We had that discussion last week.
Well, a lot of times there's more pressure. Yeah. No, I think you're right about that. All right, let's move on to my favorite team, the one I will never ever bet on again. Pittsburgh, 2.5-point underdog against the Michigan State Spartans. The two best players in this game, Kenny Pickett for Pitt, Kenneth Walker III for Michigan State, not playing. Everybody points to this as an example of why you expand the playoff, because these two guys would be playing if this was a playoff game, and I agree. They would.
I just want to see Kenny Pickett do a fake slide again now that it's against the rules.
It was pretty sweet. It's funny because it's one of those, I saw it And I'm like, man, that is a sweet play. How did he think of that? And I'm like, wait a second. You can't do that. That can't be legal.
Yeah, that changed real quick. That play.
Because if a defender had hit him after that, there'd have been like officials would have been running into the stands to find more flags to throw on the field.
I will say that I know that I'm getting old because when he like picturing the beginning of a fake slide and then to continue running is like, made me, I was like, God, he's lucky he didn't slip a disc there, you know?
Like, yeah, what would have happened to my knee if I had tried that?
If I tried exactly. to do that. And I just want to say one thing. Mel Tucker is like, should be the happiest dude on the face of the earth. Like that dude.
I mean, he's got a $9.5 million a year guaranteed contract. I think he's pretty happy.
$100 million because he nailed the transfer portal 1 year. It blows my mind, Andy. It blows my mind.
It is amazing.
The two highest paid coaches in the Big Ten are Mel Tucker and James Franklin.
Yeah.
And I think that Jim Harbaugh might be the lowest paid.
I think you may be right. Yeah, I think that's going to get changed, but
yeah,
the Mel Tucker contract made a lot more sense once you realized what was going on behind the scenes, like who was leaving for what, why schools were so obsessed with making sure they got their guy locked down if they felt like they had
a good thing going.
I do too, because if in 2 years he's not this successful, they're going to be mad. And everybody's saying, what have we done? And even if he's reasonably successful, if they're winning, you know, 8-9 games a year, that's not going to be good enough relative to what he's paid.
It's like when Michigan State signs a top 25 class, it's like the biggest deal. Imagine being the highest paid coach in your conference and that being your reality. You know, I got to be honest with you, Andy. I think I'm switching the best job in America from Kentucky to Michigan State.
See, I disagree because I think the expectations at Michigan State are going to be pretty.
No, I know.
Because of
but
this deal.
But he's making so much money and has like all the protection in the world.
Now, I will say that I expect Mel Tucker to recruit well. I expect him, as this goes on, to do a pretty good job finding players that fit what they do. He seems to understand that very well. I think they're way ahead of schedule because they did hit so well in the transfer portal that they got some proof of concept that should help them in the 2023 and 2024 recruiting cycles.
Yeah, that's Michigan State's class is number 21. I mean, it's pretty good.
Well, but that's hard to do. You don't see immediate effects from success. Like, that's what people don't understand. Like,
except when it comes to your contract.
Win a game and all of a sudden your recruiting ranking jumps.
No, I know.
10 spots.
But I'm saying if you're going to give somebody $100 million guaranteed, you'd want to see the recruiting classes first. So he got it because he nailed Kenneth Walker in the portal and hasn't signed an elite level class yet. And it'll be very interesting. And I'm very curious to see how Ohio State responds to this because you have a coach who is signing top three classes or top four classes every year. Who's the third highest rated or paid coach in his own division.
Right, and possibly fourth, depending on what Michigan does with Harbaugh if they bring him back. Yeah. So, yeah, it is going to be.
They backed the Brinks truck up real fast, though. I'll give them credit. Nobody was going to take their coach, and now they're going to be laying in that bed for a long time.
Anybody backing it up so fast? You shouldn't go that fast in reverse.
I know.
All right, on to Vegas. We're doing this chronologically, not in terms of prestige. Obviously, the Peach Bowl is a New Year's Six Bowl, but it is happening kicking off before the Vegas Bowl. So Wisconsin is a 6.5-point favorite against Arizona State. We spent the whole season going, what's this Arizona State investigation going to do to Herm Edwards? Well, maybe nothing.
I don't get it, but you know, we've had that discussion before. Maybe nothing. Well, I wonder if not winning is going to do anything.
Well, and that's the thing. They did not win at a satisfactory level this year compared to what
I don't know. Is 8-4 okay? Is 8-4 okay?
in that division? I guess it's okay. I guess it's probably the low end of what you wanted.
They lost to BYU, who's the big, who's the Pac-12 champ.
Who's really good. Yeah.
They beat UCLA. You know, you get credit for that. But their losses to Utah, Washington State, Oregon State. Beat your rival 38-15. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think Arizona State's ceiling is national championship.
Right. I mean, not as currently.
Not currently as they're constructed, right. But, yeah. I mean, right guy.
Right.
1997 this happened yesterday, you know?
You know, this is one of those where, and you've seen these Jaden Daniels games. Like, he has these games where he is just, he looks like amazing. He's playing at another speed.
Yeah.
I think this might be one of those.
Yeah. I'm with you.
I might take these points. I'll take almost a touchdown here.
I think that Arizona State could, you know, provide some issues for Wisconsin. Because I think Arizona State's more athletic than they are. But sometimes smash mouth wins out in football, as we've seen a few times this year.
Well, yeah. And this is another give a crap factor. Everybody's in Vegas. You know, are people taking the Scorpion tequila shots at Nacho Daddy before the game? Are they where do the team, we don't know where the teams stay for the Vegas Bowl. If I could tell you which resorts they stay at,
the Polo Towers,
you could tell me which one is going to be more yeah. hungover.
Yeah. What is the drunkiest hotel on the strip?
Oh, I don't know. I just spent 4 days at Aria, so it seemed pretty drunk.
Yeah, Aria's high class drunk. I think like the drunkiest drunk hotel on the strip is Harrah's.
That would make sense. That would make sense.
Because that's the place where you get
Treasure
drunk.
Island. What is Treasure Island then?
Yeah, I don't know. Harrah's has those a bunch of those like daiquiri machines, and
oh, that is
that's like where you get the yard or the foot long drink. You know, yes. That they strap around
New Orleans,
your chest.
In New Orleans, they sell yard glasses, but they're really a foot and a half. Like in Vegas, the yard glasses are a yard long.
They're longer than a yard. I feel like yeah, and they're like $8 or no, they're probably like $18, and you got 19 shots of bottom shelf crap that alcohol. They throw in there. Yeah, and everybody's just vomiting on each other. Yeah. I think Harrah's is probably up there.
And on that I note, think get ready for some great football in the Las Vegas Bowl. Yeah,
I do think that the lower the hotel rate, the higher the drunkiness it is. Now, I haven't stepped foot in right. Circus in like 15 years, but I bet it's pretty drunky in there too.
I would think so. I would think so. All right, let's move on to one of the more intriguing games, the Gator Bowl. We don't have a line for it because they just officially, as we're recording the podcast, announced who's playing in it. So we don't have a line yet. Wake Forest and coming in to save the day after Texas A&M had to opt out because of COVID. Rutgers. Who knew that the Rutgers-Illinois game was actually for bowl eligibility?
Are they going to extend Shiano tomorrow or wait till the end of the week? Next week?
I don't know. This is they made a we're going bowling video. Like they
congratulations,
took the time
Wake
to
Forest.
Go to a bowling alley and film a bowling ball, like the Big Lebowski beauty shot of the bowling ball rolling down the lane to do the we're going bowling video. That probably is what delayed the official announcement of that game.
Congratulations, Wake Forest, on one of the best seasons in program history. At the end of the road, you get to play Rutgers.
The thing is, Wake Forest still has almost everybody there. I think Wake Forest
is going to score 65 points in this game.
Yeah, I think Wake Forest rolls here. And Rutgers, it's they're happy to be there. They haven't been practicing.
Yeah.
They're going to get three days of practice.
How does this logistically work? They're just like, all right, everybody, come back to the building. We can film.
Yeah.
We get three days of practice. We're playing in a game in a week.
This is going to be wild. By the way, we're going to have to, this next segment here, Ari, we're moving on to a different game that may or may not be affected by COVID. So we're recording this 8 days before the game gets played. we could be completely wrong. We'll probably have two more podcasts before this, so bear with us here. Would you like to make a prediction as to whether... Okay, I'll give you several questions. One, does the Sun Bowl get played at all? Two, does Miami play in it against Washington State? Or is it someone else?
I don't know, man. How do you predict this? I got to get my booster. I don't know. I have no idea what's going on.
I would say it's impossible to say right now because as we're recording this, Miami's in flux. They're saying we're coming, we're planning to be there. The Sun Bowl's saying we're planning to have Miami, but there's no possible way to know. The give a crap meter, Miami's fired its coach, it's hired its new coach. The offensive coordinator who was there last year is now the head coach at SMU. Like, I don't know who's running the team at this point. We know who's running the team.
But, I mean, I don't know, man. What makes the decision of whether they can play or not, whether or not they have enough players that can clear it? And like, I think this is a nice segue to the next games too, because did you see all those rules about how they can crown a national champion in the playoff if we're getting to the playoff games now?
Yes.
That's insanity to me.
You can forfeit your way into the national title game, and you can forfeit your way to a national title.
It's insanity.
Just don't play. Okay, I understand. Like with the national title game, they say they can't play it past January 14th. Presumably, they can't get the stadium. I mean, the Colts are going to be in the playoffs, so and that Indianapolis is a huge convention town. Like that stadium is booked for a lot of stuff. So I get that. But if you can't play it there, there's a 100-yard field somewhere that you can find.
That's what I was going to say. Like, if you're going to, what's the difference between playing it on a high school field or not playing it at all and not getting anything? Like, just go find a field and play it. Could you imagine if they named the national champion this year because of forfeit?
People would riot.
I would hate that more than anything.
Oh, it'd be awful. It would be awful.
It's like you're punishing people for getting sick unpredictably. It's so stupid. Dude, when I got COVID last year, I just moved to Dallas. I literally had no friends. I still don't have any friends. I didn't go in public. I did everything they told me to do. I wore a mask. I didn't do anything socially. It was in the middle of Thanksgiving last year. I think I got it at a gas station just picking up groceries from the pickup line. Like, it's bullcrap. You don't know where you're going to get it or how you're going to get it. I mean, you could be the biggest asshole on the face of the earth and never do anything for precaution, or you can be the safest human being on the planet. If you go into public, you're in a position where you could potentially get it. And to stop these kids potentially from playing for a national championship or figuring out a contingency plan after a full year of what it just like would be awful. I'm really hoping that doesn't happen to anybody. I don't mean crowning the national champion. I really hope nobody just gets out of the playoff because of it. Could you imagine if Michigan, who's finally getting there?
Oh, God, that would be awful. Oh, my God. Well, any of them, it would be awful. Think about it.
It'd be awful for anybody, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so
Cincinnati, like...
We're all hoping that doesn't happen. We'll talk about this more next week for sure, because we've got to preview those games. We'll have a little better idea of what's going to happen and how the logistics of the games are going to work. But man, I don't even, when all that stuff was coming down on Wednesday and the news was coming out, I was just like, don't let this happen. Just do not let this happen. You cannot crown a champion this way. Ari, before we go today, we got one more game. This is the last game that will be played before one of the semis. It is the Arizona Bowl, Boise State versus Central Michigan. This is the one that Barstool is sponsoring. It'll be streamed on all of their platforms. Ari, I feel like we really missed an opportunity here. This should be the Athletic, or this should be the Ass Bowl. This should be the Andy Staples Show Bowl.
We should have an Ass Bowl.
You and I should be the announcers. Because honestly, who's ever going to hire us to announce a game unless it's ourselves?
Honestly, you would be the play-by-play and the color, and my only job would be to point out everybody's recruiting ranking.
Well, I'd be fine with that.
Anytime somebody who's a blue chip prospect makes a play, I go, wait, and I wonder why that happened.
We can differentiate ourselves from the other broadcasts for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and we have the whole team. We have the whole crew. You know, we could have one sideline reporter with each team. So we'd have Nicole with one team and let's say Max Olson with the other team. And the studio crew would be Jason Kersey and Sam Kahn and David Ubben. Oh, I think this would be good.
The Ass Bowl would have to be Pitt, Michigan State.
It would have to be. No question. Well, I mean, Pitt would have to be involved. There's no question about that. But yeah. I think we'd have to take who we could get. I think we'd have to make deals with conferences and take who we could get. But really, we blew this. You know, if we had known that you could just get a bowl game and look, we just streamed that glorious post-fasting show on all of our platforms. We could do the same thing with a football game. Yeah, we have the technology, Ari.
My goal in life now is to call a game with you. And have it on a channel where I can speak like I would speak to you if we were sitting in the same room just watching it.
So let's listen. Okay, here's what has to happen. We need you, the listener, to smash that 5-star review button over and over and over. Tell all of your friends to subscribe. Smash the 5-star review. We got to get this podcast up. We got to get some listener. You know, we're going to increase our listenership. We're going to increase our rating. Get up the Apple charts, and that will give us enough clout and enough advertising revenue to buy our way into our own bowl game. Now we could do like. We could make this a project. Like we have the listeners vote on which conferences we make deals with. We'd be like, listen, we got the MAC locked down, but we don't know if we're gonna do the one with the Sun Belt or the American. Like, you tell us what do you want? Who would you rather see? Would you rather see American number 8 or Sun Belt number 3 in our game? And we let the listeners decide. I think that would be an amazing process to go through.
Plus, Ass Bowl has a good ring to it.
Ass Bowl has a great ring to it. And I've been the one saying that these bowl directors are getting off easy, that they're overpaid and underworked. And well, I had one yell at me one time saying, if you traded jobs with me for a day, you wouldn't like it. I'm like, if I traded jobs with you for a week, you'd be crying. Because I actually have to work for a living. And I don't even
talking
have
about
a real
the bowl
job.
Reps, the bowl reps that
no bowl the director who actually runs the bowl, not the reps. The reps really don't have a job, but I mean they have real jobs. They're just volunteering on that. Yeah. So no, I would like to see how much work it actually is to stage a game because I think it's probably a decent amount of work. Is it a full year's worth of work? I don't think so. I'm probably guessing no.
Yeah.
So,
but you get a sweet blazer though.
I think. What color? What we would have
the
to
Fiesta
have
Bowl
blazers?
Blazers
right?
Those light yellow Fiesta Bowl ones are sweet.
Ugh. The Rose Bowl blazers are the best ones.
Yeah, no question. Because the Rose Bowl's got the best logo too. It's also in the best place and has the best weather and the best brand recognition.
Sugar's nice because it's a navy blue blazer with a silver crest on it. It always looks good. But we need let's do like a Madras plaid.
It'd be funny if we just used the Happy Gilmore jacket and put an ass patch on the top there. Blue jacket, green jacket, who gives a shit, you know?
Oh, all right. Listeners, you tell us. Hit us up. I'm at @Andy_Staples. Ari is at Ari Wasserman.
Yep.
And tell us, what leagues do we need in our game in the Ass Bowl? What color will our blazers be? How do we set up the broadcast team using the Andy Staples Show and Friends lineup? We're going to make this happen next year, Ari. I can feel it in my loins.
I want it so bad.
By the way, I'm not sure when you're listening to this, but it may already be past 6:59 p.m. Eastern time on Christmas Day. And if it is, you have about a week. You have until... I believe 6:59 p.m. Eastern Time on New Year's Eve to subscribe to The Athletic for the low, 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 low price of $2 a month for your first year. So $24 a year, $2 a month, less than half a latte a month. Go to theathletic.com/Andy Staples. Remember, that deal starts on Christmas Day, Christmas night, 6:59 p.m. Eastern Time, and runs until 6:59 p.m. Eastern Time on New Year's Eve. So before the semifinals kick off, remember, or well, you'll be in the middle of watching one game. You'll be in the middle of watching the Cotton Bowl. Before the Orange Bowl kicks off, make sure you subscribe. $24 a year. I mean, come on, can't beat that. So, Ari, it has been a pleasure. We have discussed a lot of bowl games. We have discussed the Ass Bowl. We have discussed a bowl trophy that includes someone's naked ass.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a pretty good theme. Everybody have a merry, merry Christmas. Travel safe. Don't do anything I wouldn't. We'll talk to you next week.
That's the Ash show.